He would have caught me in a pair of Mother May I giant steps. Just before she could grab my head, as she'd grabbed Amit's, I fired 5 more times in rapid succession. Each shot went into her open, screaming mouth. The first 2, maybe the first 3, took most of her teeth with them. In the War of the Worlds, our most sophisticated weapons didn't do much to stop the rampaging Martians. It was earthly germs that killed them. I don't think any single bullet from Polly's little gun did for Red Molly, nor even all 8, which was every cartridge left in the clip. I think she pulled her broken teeth down her throat and choked on them. 5. If she had fallen on me, her weight might have held me pinned until Kellen and his night soldiers arrived, or killed me outright. She had to go 500 pounds minimum. But she went to her knees, first gasping and choking and holding her bleeding throat. Her eyes bulged sightlessly. I scrambled back on my ass, tipped over on my side, and rolled. The night soldiers were closing in. I'd never beat them to the gate. And the gun was used up, slide back, chamber empty. She made one final effort to reach me, waving her wounded arm and stippling my cheeks and forehead with her blood. Then she fell on her face. I stood up. I could run, but what was the point? Better to face them head on and die as best I could. What I thought of then was my father, who would still be hoping I'd come home. He and Lindy Franklin and my Uncle Bob would have papered every town between Century and Shy with pictures of me and Radar. Have you seen this boy or this dog? The passage to Empus would be left unguarded, and maybe that was more important than one bereft father. But as the night soldiers neared, it was Dad I was thinking of. He'd gotten sober, and for what? Wife gone, son lost without a trace. But if Iota could lead the others through the gate, where I didn't believe the night soldiers could go, they'd be free. There was that.
Come on, you sons of bitches!
I screamed. I tossed the useless gun away and spread my arms wide. Behind the line of blue shapes, Kellen had stopped his little bus. Content just to watch me killed, I thought at first, but it wasn't me he was looking at. It was the sky. The night soldiers stopped, still 70 or 80 yards away. They were looking up too, with identical expressions of amazement on the gauzy human faces that overlaid their skulls. There was enough light to see by, even though the 2 ever-racing moons were hidden. A cloud below the clouds was coming over the outside wall. It was unrolling toward the Galleon Road, the fancy shops and arches, and the palace beyond, where the 3 glass-green spires shone in the lights ringing the field. It was a cloud of monarchs, the sort of group known as a kaleidoscope. They flew above me without stopping. It was the night soldiers they wanted. They halted, circled, and then dive-bombed en masse. The soldiers raised their arms, as the flight killer was said to have done after his coup, but they didn't have his power, and the butterflies didn't die. Except, that is, for the ones that struck those high-voltage auras first. There were brilliant flashes when they hit the blue envelopes. It was as if a crowd of invisible children were waving 4th of July sparklers. Hundreds burned up, but thousands more followed, either smothering the deadly auras or shorting them out. The cloud seemed to solidify as it engulfed the night soldiers. But not Lord High Kellen. His little electric bus made a tight U-turn and headed back to the palace, making good speed. Some of the monarchs broke off and chased it, but it was too fast for them, and the roof would have protected the son of a bitch anyway. The night soldiers that had been chasing us were finished, all of them. The only movement where they had been was the flutter of delicate wings. I saw one bony hand rise and then sink back into the orange-red mass on top of it. I ran for the outer gate. It was open. My party of prisoners had gone outside, but something else came in at a dead run, something black, low to the ground, and barking like hell. I had thought the only thing I wanted was to get the hell out of the haunted city of Lillimar, but now I realized there was something else I wanted more. I thought of Dora, when she'd caught sight of my dog, how she had called to her as best she could in her broken voice. My voice was also broken, not by some degenerative curse, but by sobs. I fell to my knees and held out my arms.
Radar! Radar! Raids!
She collided with me and knocked me over, whining and licking my face from top to bottom. I hugged her with all my strength, and I cried. I couldn't stop crying. Not very princely, I suppose, but as you may have guessed already, this isn't that kind of a fairy tale. 6. A bellowing voice that I knew very well broke up our happy reunion.
Charlie! Prince Charlie! Get the fuck out of there so we can shut the gate! Come to us, Charlie!
Right, I thought, getting to my feet. And strain your pooper, Prince Charlie. Radar danced around me, barking. I ran toward the gate. Claudia was standing just outside of it, and she wasn't alone. Woody was with her, and between them, astride Falada, was Leah. Behind them were the remaining escapees from Deep Malene, and behind those were others, a crowd of people I couldn't make out. Claudia wouldn't cross into Lillimar, but she grabbed me as soon as I came through the gate and pulled me into a hug so strong I felt my spine creak.
"Where is he?"
Woody asked.
"I hear the dog, but where?"
"Here," I said. "Right here." This time it was my turn to hug. When I let him go, Woody put his palm to his forehead and dropped to one knee.
"My prince, it was you, all along, and you've come just as the old story said you would."
"Get up," I said. With tears still pouring from my eyes, plus snot from my nose that I wiped away with the back of my hand, and blood all over me, I never felt less princely in my life.
"Please, Woody, get up. Rise."
He did. I looked at my group, watching with awe. Eris and Jaya were hugging each other. I had Freed in his arms. It was clear that some of my friends, maybe all, knew exactly who these three people were. Not just whole people, but whole people of the true blood. They were the exiled royalty of Empis, and, except perhaps for the insane Yolanda and Burton the anchorite, they were the last of the Galleon line. Behind the dungeon refugees were 60 or 70 gray people, some carrying torches and some with torpedo lanterns similar to the one Percy had left for me. Among them, I saw someone I knew. Radar had run to her already. I went to her, barely aware that the deformed people who had been cursed by Eldin, or by the being that had used him as a puppet, were falling to their knees all around me, their palms to their foreheads. Dora also tried to go to her knees. I wouldn't let her. I embraced her, kissed both of her gray cheeks and the corner of her crescent mouth. I brought her back to Woody, Claudia, and Leah.
"Close in the name of Leah of the Galleon!"
Claudia bellowed. The gate began to trundle slowly shut, its machinery groaning like a thing in pain. As it did, I saw an enormous figure loping in long strides down the central thoroughfare. Clouds of monarchs swirled above and around it, some even lit on the broad shoulders and blocky head. But this was no night soldier, and the figure simply ignored them. As the gate passed the halfway mark on its hidden track, she gave a wail of grief so loud and so awful that everyone except Claudia covered their ears.
"Molly!"
Hannah screamed.
"Oh, my Molly, oh, my dear! How could you lie so still?"
She bent over her dead daughter, then stood. There were many of us gathered before the closing gate, but it was me she was looking at.
"Come back!"
She raised fists like boulders and shook them.
Come back, you coward, so I can kill you for what you've done to my dear one.
Then the gate crashed closed, cutting off the sight of Red Molly's bereft mother. 7. I looked up at Leah. No blue dress this night. No white apron. She was dressed in dark pants tucked into high leather boots and a quilted blue vest with a monarch butterfly, the royal crest of the galleon, on the left side above her heart. Around her waist was a wide belt. Hanging from one hip was a dagger. On the other was a scabbard holding a short sword with a golden hilt. "Hello, Leah," I said, feeling suddenly shy. "I'm very glad to see you." She turned away from me with no sign that she'd heard. She might have been as deaf as Claudia. Her mouthless face was a stone. Chapter 27. A Conference. The Snab. No Disney Prince. Prince and Princess. The Pact. 1. I remember two things with great clarity about our conference. No one mentioned the name Gogmagog, and Leah never looked at me. Not once. 2. There were 6 people and 2 animals in the storage shed later that night. The shed where Radar and I had sheltered before entering Lillimar. Woody, Claudia, and I sat together on the floor. Radar lay beside me, with her muzzle firmly planted on my leg, as if wanting to be sure I would not escape her again. Leah sat apart from us, on the steps at the front of the seafront trolley. In the far corner was Franna, the gray woman who had whispered, "Help her," to me just before I left the farm of the Gugur. Franna was stroking Falada's head, which was deep in a sack of grain Iota was holding for her. Outside were the rest of the Deep Maligne escapees and a growing number of gray folk. There was no howling. Wolfies apparently didn't care for crowds. Mr. Bowditch's .45 was once more on my hip. Claudia might be deaf, but her eyes were keen. She had seen the gleam of the blue stones in the concho belt as it lay deep in the weeds growing hard by the outside wall near the gate. The gun needed to be oiled and cleaned before I could be sure it worked, and I'd have to take care of that later. I thought I might be able to find what I needed on one of the littered work tables at the back of the shed. This had pretty clearly been a repair shop once upon a better time. Woody said,
"The snake has been wounded but still lives. We have to cut off its head before it can renew its poison, and you must lead, Charlie."
He took a pad and a fancy nib pen from the pocket of his coat and wrote on it as quickly and surely as any sighted person as he spoke. He held it up to Claudia. She read and nodded vigorously.
"You must lead, Charlie. You are the prince that was promised, Adrian's heir from the magic world."
Leah briefly looked up at Claudia, then down again, a sheaf of hair screening her face. Her fingers played along the knurled grip of her sword. I certainly hadn't promised anything to anyone. I was tired and afraid, but there was something more important than those things. "Let's say you're right, Woody. Let's say allowing Flight Killer to renew his poison is dangerous for us and all of Empis."
"It would be,"
he said quietly.
"It is."
"Even so, I won't lead a crowd of mostly unarmed people into the city, if that's what you're thinking. Half of the night soldiers might be dead. There weren't all that many to begin with."
"No,"
Woody agreed.
"Most died the true death rather than go on half alive in the service of a monster."
I was looking at Leah. In truth, I could hardly take my eyes from her, and I saw her flinch, as if Woody had struck at her. "We killed 7, and the monarchs killed even more, but that leaves the rest."
"No more than a dozen.
I growled from the corner.
Maybe not that many. The Monarchs killed 10 that I counted, and Kellen's bunch weren't even 30 to start with.
Are you sure? He shrugged.
Stuck in that place for what felt like forever, there was nothing to do but count. When I wasn't counting night soldiers, I was counting drips from the ceiling or blocks in my cell floor.
There had been 43 blocks in the floor of mine.
Even a dozen is too many when they can shock you unconscious by touching or kill you by hugging, I said. And there's Kellen to command those who are left.
Woody scrawled Kellen on his pad and held it up for Claudia. Being blind, he held it up in the wrong place. I moved it so she could see.
Kellen, yes,
Claudia shouted.
And don't forget Hannah.
No, it wouldn't do to forget Hannah, who would be out for blood. Woody sighed and rubbed his face.
Kellen was the leader of the King's Guard when my brother reigned. Smart and brave. Back then I would have added loyal. I would never have believed he'd turn against Jan. But then I never would have believed Eldon would do what he did.
He couldn't see Leah turn away from him as she had from me when I looked up at her to say hello. But I saw.
Here's how I see it, I said. We have to stop the flight killer before he does something else, something worse. I mean, look what he's done already. He's turned the whole goddamn kingdom gray. He's turned the people gray, except for a few who are...
I almost said byblows, a term I'd heard my dad use about Scooter McLean, a grammar school classmate of mine with unfortunate jug ears.
Who are whole?
I finished lamely.
And he's been rooting those out. I just don't know how to deal with him or when.
When's easy, Iota said.
He had finished feeding Falada and was tucking the depleted sack into one of the panniers strapped across her flanks.
Daylight. The blue boys are weaker then, and they don't go out in the sun at all. Or, poof, nothing but bones.
He looked at Woody.
At least that's what I heard.
I've heard that too,
Woody said.
But I wouldn't trust it for a fact.
He was scribbling on his pad and held it up to Claudia. I couldn't see what he had written there, but she shook her head and smiled.
Nana, he can't do more than he has already without going to it. And he can't do that until the moon's kiss. That's the legend, and I believe it's true lore.
Leah looked up, and for the first time she seemed engaged. She turned to Falada. When the horse began to speak, Iota's reaction was amusing, to say the least.
My mistress saw them tonight when the clouds broke for a few moments, and Bella has almost caught up to Arabella.
Woody reached out to Claudia and tapped her arm to get her attention. He pointed in Leah's direction, pointed skyward, and moved two fingers in front of Claudia's face, one barely trailing the other. Claudia's eyes widened, and her smile disappeared. She looked at Leah.
You saw this?
Leah nodded. Claudia turned back to me, with an expression on her face I hadn't seen before. It was fear.
Then it must be tomorrow. You must stop him, Charlie. You're the only one who can. He must be killed before Arabella kisses her sister. He can't be allowed to open the dark well again.
Leah jumped to her feet, grabbed Falada's bridle, and started to lead her toward the door. Radar raised her head and whined. Franna followed Leah and touched her shoulder. Leah shrugged her away. I got up.
Leave her. Leave her. Her heart is broken and needs time to mend,
Claudia said. She no doubt meant well, but her blaring voice robbed her words of any intended compassion. Leah shrank from them. I went to her anyway.
Leah, please come back.
She pushed me so hard I almost fell down. And left, leading the horse that was her voice. 3. There was no need for her to open the door, because with no wolves in the vicinity, there was no reason to pull it closed. The crowd of gray folk was still growing, and when Leah emerged, leading her horse, those standing fell to their knees. They all put their palms to their foreheads. There was no doubt in my mind that if ordered by her or the other two surviving royals to retake the city, or at least try, they would do it. It was my coming that had led to this. Any effort to deny it broke down when met by one simple fact. They really thought I was the prince that had been promised. I didn't know about Leah, but Woody and Claudia believed the same thing. That made the crowd of would-be rebels, Dora among them, my responsibility. I started after Leah, but Claudia caught my arm.
Nah, stay. Franna will watch over her.
Woody said,
Be at your ease for now, Charlie. Rest if you can. You must be exhausted.
I explained that we escapees might become sleepy once the sun was up, but for now we were wide awake. It didn't hurt to be jacked up on adrenaline and the hard-to-believe joy of being out of the dungeon and away from the killing field. Woody listened, nodded, and wrote a note for Claudia. I was fascinated at how neat and even his writing was, even though he couldn't see. The note said, Charlie and his band are used to waking night, sleeping day. Claudia nodded that she understood. She's angry because she loved him, isn't that right? When I met her, she said, through Falada, that Eldon was always good to her. Woody wrote on his pad and held it up to Claudia. He wants to know about L and E. Beneath this, he had drawn a question mark.
Tell him what you will, Claudia boomed. We have a long night, and long nights are good for stories. He deserves to know.
All right,
Woody said.
Know then, Charlie, that Leah chooses to believe Eldon dead because she will not believe, cannot, that he has become the Flight Killer. As children, they were like this.
He put his hands together and interlaced the fingers.
Some of it was just the circumstances of birth. They were the two youngest, and when they weren't ignored, they were picked on. The older sisters, Drew, Ellie, Joy, and Fala, hated Leah because she was her mother and father's youngest, their pet, but also because they were plain and she was pretty.
What's he telling you?
Claudia blared. I decided she could read lips a little after all.
Is he being diplomatic as was his job in the days when Jan sat the throne? Nana, tell the truth, Stephen Woodley. Leah was as beautiful as a summer morning, and the other four were as ugly as stone boats. Those four took after their father, but Leah was her mother's image.
Again, ugly as stone boats wasn't exactly what she said, but what I heard. I don't think I have to tell you that what I was hearing was another fairy tale. All it lacked was a glass slipper.
The girls sharpened their already sharp tongues on Eldon,
Woody said.
Called him Stumpy and Deadfoot and Mr. Squint and Greyface.
Greyface? Really? Woody gave a thin-lipped smile.
You begin to see a bit of his revenge, do you not? Since Eldon Flight Killer came to rule, Empis is populated almost solely by grey-faced people. He is rooting out the few who are immune to the curse, and he would kill every monarch butterfly if he could. He wants no flowers in his garden, only weeds.
He leaned forward, clasping his knees, his pad of paper in one hand.
But girls use only words. His brother terrorized Eldon with punches and kicks when there was no one around to see but his loyal cadre of lickspittles. There was no need for it. Robert was as fair of face as Eldon was ugly. He was petted and cosseted by his parents, while Eldon was largely ignored by them. and Robert had no cause for jealousy on account of the throne, since he was the older and bound to take it when Jan died or stepped down. He just hated and loathed his younger brother. I think...
He paused, frowning.
I think there's always a reason for love, but sometimes hate just is. A kind of free-floating evil.
I didn't reply, but thought of my two Rumpelstiltskins, Christopher Pauly and Peterkin. Why had the dwarf gone to all the trouble of erasing the trail of initials that would have taken me out of the city long before dark? Why had he risked his life and lost it to point me out to Red Molly? Because I'd crossed him in the matter of a red cricket? Because I was tall and he was short? I didn't believe that for a minute. He'd done it because he could, and because he wanted to cause trouble.
Franna came back in and whispered in Woody's ear. He nodded.
She says there's a church nearby that hasn't been destroyed. Leah has gone in there with Dora, the lady who mends the shoes, and a few others to sleep.
I remembered seeing the church. Maybe that's good. She must be tired. For Claudia's benefit, I pointed to Franna at the door, then put my hands together and laid my head against them.
Tired? Leah and all of us? We've had a long trip, some of these for many days.
Go on, please, I said to Woody. You were saying the girls hated Leah and Robert hated Eldon.
They all hated Eldon,
Woody said.
All but Leah. There was a feeling at court that he wouldn't survive to 20.
I thought of the flabby, drooling thing in the VIP spectators box. His complexion gone past gray to an even more unhealthy green, and wondered how old Eldon was now. I also wondered what had been shifting around beneath that purple caftan cum robe, but wasn't sure I really wanted to know.
The two youngest were driven together by the hate and dislike of the others, also because they genuinely loved each other, and, I think, because they were smarter. They explored almost every nook and cranny of the palace, from the tips of the spires where they were forbidden to go but where they went anyway, to the lower levels.
Deep Malin.
Likely, and deeper still. There are many ancient ways beneath the city, where few have been for long years. I don't know if Leah was with him when he stumbled on the way to the deep well. She refuses to talk about the years when they began to grow out of their childhood. But they did go almost everywhere together, except perhaps for the palace library. Smart as she was, Leah was never a one for books. Eldon was the reader of the two.
Bet his brother made fun of him for that, too, I put in.
Woody turned to him and smiled.
Truly said, you friend of Charlie. Robert and the sisters as well.
What are you telling him now?
Claudia asked. Woody scribbled a brief recap on his pad. She read it, then said,
Tell him about Elsa.
I straightened up. The mermaid?
Yes,
Woody agreed.
The palace mermaid. Did you by chance see her?
I nodded. I wasn't going to say I'd seen what was left of her.
She lived in a little hidden alcove,
Woody said.
A grotto, almost. I'd like to believe she lives there still, but I very much doubt it. She's probably died of neglect or starvation, and possibly sadness.
She had died, all right, but it hadn't been neglect, starvation, or sadness that had killed her.
Eldon and Leah fed her, and she sang to them. Strange songs, but beautiful. Leah used to sing some herself.
He paused.
When she still had a mouth to sing with.
I stroked Radar's head. She looked up at me sleepily. Our trip had been hard for her as well as for me, but for Raids, things had turned out well.
She had a new lease on life and was with people who loved her. Thinking about her escape made me think of how I had gotten news of her survival. "Tell me about the cricket," I said to Claudia. "The red cricket, big as this?" I held my hands apart. "I don't understand how it got to you. Did it come with radar? And why?" She gave me an exasperated look.
"Did you forget I can't hear you, Charlie?"
I had, actually. I could tell you it was because her hair was down tonight, covering the sides of her head where her ears had been. But that wouldn't be true. I just forgot. So I told Woody about how I'd saved the red cricket from Peterkin, and how I'd later seen it coming out of a hole in the dungeon wall with a note stuck to its belly, one with a little bundle of radar's fur folded inside. How I had attached my own note to it and sent it on its way, following my father's dictum, "Expect nothing but never lose hope."
"Good advice," Woody said,
and began to scratch on his pad. He wrote fast, every line amazingly straight. Outside the door, the gray folk were settling in for the night, those who had brought blankets sharing them. Across the way, I could see Falada tied to a hitching post outside the church and cropping grass. Woody passed the pad to Claudia, and as she read what was written there, she began to smile. It made her beautiful. When she spoke, it wasn't in her usual booming voice, but in a much lower one, as if talking to herself. She said,
"In spite of Eldon's best efforts, on behalf of the entity he serves, he may not believe he is that thing's tool, but he surely is. The magic survives, because magic is hard to destroy. You've seen that for yourself, haven't you?"
I nodded and stroked Radar, who had been dying and was now young and strong again after her 6 turns on the sundial.
"Yes, the magic survives. He calls himself Flight Killer now, but you've seen for yourself that thousands, no, millions, of the monarchs still live. And while Elsa may be dead, the Snab still lives. Thanks to you, Charlie."
"The Snab?"
Iota asked, sitting up straight. He smacked his forehead with the palm of one big hand.
"My gods, why didn't I know when I saw it?"
"When he came to me. Oh, Charlie, when he came."
To my alarm, she began to weep.
"To hear again, Charlie. Oh, to hear again. Even though not a human voice was so wonderful."
Radar got up and padded across to her. Claudia put her head close to Radar's for a few moments, at the same time stroking her sides from neck to tail, taking comfort. Woody put an arm around her. I thought about doing the same, but didn't. Prince or not, I was too shy. She raised her head and wiped the tears from her cheeks with the heels of her hands. When she resumed, it was at her usual volume.
"Elsa the mermaid sang to the children. Did Stephen tell you that?"
"Yes," I said, then remembered she was deaf and nodded.
"She would sing to any who stopped to listen, but only if they would clear their minds of other thoughts so they could hear. Robert and Leah's sisters had no time for such silliness, but Eldon and Leah were different. They were beautiful songs, weren't they, Woody?"
"They were," he said, although from the expression on his face, I doubted if he'd had much time for Elsa's songs either. I tapped my forehead, then leaned forward and tapped hers. I raised my hands in a questioning gesture.
"Yes, Charlie, not songs that could be heard with ears, for mermaids can't speak."
"But the cricket?" I made jumping gestures with a hand. "The, what did you call it, a snab?" "I'll spare you Claudia's booming voice for a bit, shall I?" The red cricket wasn't a snab, but the snab. Claudia called him the king of the small world.
I assumed then that she meant insects. It's just a damn insect, Peterkin had said, but later I came to believe that the snab might be the ruler of many of the creatures I'd seen. And like Elsa the mermaid, the snab could speak to humans. And it had spoken to Claudia after accompanying Radar to her house. According to Claudia, the snab made most of the trip riding on Radar's back. That was hard for me to picture, but I could understand why. The cricket was still recovering from an injured back leg, after all. The snab told her the dog's master had been either killed or taken prisoner in Lillimar. It had asked Claudia if there was anything it could do beyond shepherding the dog safely back to her. Because, it said, the young man had saved its life, and that sort of debt had to be repaid. It told her that if the young man were still alive, he would have been imprisoned in Deep Malin, and it knew a way in.
The snab, Iota said in a wondering voice. I saw the snab and didn't even know. I'll be poked.
It didn't speak to me, I said. Woody smiled at that.
Were you listening?
Of course I hadn't been. My mind had been filled with my own thoughts, just as the minds of many who passed Elsa didn't hear her songs because they were too busy to listen. That much is true about songs and many stories, even in my own world. They speak mind to mind, but only if you listen. It occurred to me that I had not only been saved by a dream of my mother's hairdryer, but also by a cricket king to whom I had done a good turn. Remember when I said at the outset that no one would believe my story? 4. Woody and Claudia were tired, I could see that. Even Radar was now snoozing, but there was more I needed to know. What did Leah mean about the moon's kissing? Woody said,
Perhaps your friend can tell you.
Iota was eager to do so. He had been told the story of the Sky Sisters as a child, and as you probably know for yourself, dear reader, it's the stories of our childhood that make the deepest impressions and last the longest.
They chase each other, as everyone has seen, or did, before the clouds came so thick and constant.
He glanced at Woody's scars.
Those with eyes, anyway. Sometimes it's Bella in the lead, sometimes Arabella. Most of the time one leads the other by a lot, but then the distance begins to close.
I had seen that for myself on the occasions when the clouds rifted apart.
Eventually, one passes the other, and on that night they merge and appear to kiss.
In the old days it was told by men of wisdom that someday they'll actually collide,
Woody said.
And both will be smashed to bits. They might not even need to collide for them to be destroyed. Their mutual attraction might pull them to pieces, as sometimes happens in human lives.
Iota had no interest in such philosophical postulates. He said,
'Tis also told that on the night when the Sky Sisters kiss, every evil thing is set free to work wickedness on the world.
He paused.
When I was a youngster, we were forbidden to go out on nights when the sisters kissed. The wolves howled, the wind howled, but not just the wolves and the wind.
He looked at me somberly.
Charlie, the world howled as if it was in pain.
And Eldon can open this deep well when it happens? That's the legend? No answer from Woody or I, but the look on their faces was enough to tell me that as far as they were concerned, it was no legend. And a creature lives in this deep well? The thing that turned Eldon into the flight killer?
Yes,
Woody said.
You know its name. And if you do, you know that even saying that name is dangerous.
I did know.
Listen to me, Charlie.
At Claudia's bellowing, toneless voice, Radar opened her eyes and lifted her head, then lowered it again.
Tomorrow we go into the city and retake it while the night soldiers are at their weakest. Leah will lead us as is her right, but you must find Eldon and slay him before he can open the well. It should be Leah. She is the rightful heir to the throne, and as such it should be her task, her burden. But...
She didn't want to say the rest any more than she wanted to speak the name of Gog Magog, the lurker in the deep well. And she didn't have to. Leah was firm in her belief that her beloved brother, with whom she had listened to the songs of the mermaid, couldn't be the flight killer. In spite of all she must have heard and all she herself was suffering, it was easier for her to believe Eldon was dead, that the monster who ruled over the ruins of Lilimar and its few remaining inhabitants was an impostor who had taken his name. If she discovered it was indeed Eldon, and found him somewhere deep in the maze of tunnels and catacombs far below, she might hesitate and be murdered, as so many of her relatives had been.
"You are the prince who has been promised,"
Claudia said.
"You have all the senses of which we have been robbed. You are Adrian's heir, he who came from the magic world. You are the one who must kill Eldon before he can open that hell pit."
Iota was listening with wide eyes and a dropped jaw. It was Woody who broke the silence. He spoke quietly, but each word hit me like a blow.
"Here is the worst thing, the worst possibility. What went back into the deep well once may not go back again. By opening it, Eldon risks not just the graying of our world, but its total destruction. And then, who knows where that thing might go?"
He leaned forward until his eyeless face was inches from mine.
"Empis, Bella, Arabella. There are other worlds than these, Charlie."
Indeed there were. Hadn't I come from one of them? I think that's when the coldness started to come over me. The one I remembered from the worst of my outings with Birdie Bird, and from Polly when I'd broken first one of his hands and then the other. And from Claw. I had thrown the drumstick at him and said, "I'm gonna fuck you up, honey." Which I did, and without regret. I was no Disney prince. And maybe that was good. A Disney prince wasn't what the people of Empis needed.
5. Claudia and Woody were asleep. So were the gray folk who had come with them. They'd had an arduous trip, and more work for them lay ahead in the day, or days, to follow. I, on the other hand, had never felt more awake, and not just because my waking and sleeping hours had been turned upside down. I had 1,000 unanswered questions. The most terrible was what Gog Magog might do if it got out of its well. I was haunted by the idea that it might come to our world, just as the oversized cockroach had done. The roach that started it all, I thought, and almost laughed. I went outside. The sounds of the sleepers, grunts, moans, the occasional fart, reminded me of my nights in Deep Malene. I sat against the wall of the shed and looked up at the sky, hoping for a break in the clouds just enough to see a single star or two, possibly even Bella and Arabella, but there was only blankness, which in daytime would be more gray. Across Kingdom Road, Falada continued to graze outside of the church. A few dying campfires illuminated more sleepers over there. There had to be 100 people now, at least. Not yet an army, but getting there. Shadows moved beside me. I turned and saw I and Radar. I squatted on his hunkers. Raid sat beside him, her nose moving delicately as she took in the scents of the night. "Can't sleep?" I asked.
"Nah, nah. Clock inside my head's all wrong. Join the club," I thought.
"How often do the moons pass overhead?" he considered.
3 times a night, at least. Sometimes 10.
This made no sense to me because I lived in a world where the clock of the universe always ran on time. Moonrise and moonset could be predicted to a nicety 10, 50, 100 years in advance. This was not that world. This was a world where mermaids and a red cricket called the snab could project songs and thoughts into the heads of those who listened.
I wish I could see them, see how close together they really are.
Well, you can't, but you may see their glow through the clouds when they pass. The brighter the glow, the closer they be. But why bother? Unless you think the princess was lying about what she saw?
I shook my head. There had been no mistaking the look of alarm on Leah's face.
Is it true you come from another world?
Iota asked abruptly.
A magic world. I think it must be so, because I've never seen a weapon like the one you wear on your hip.
He paused.
I've never seen a one like you either. I thank the high gods I didn't have to stand against you in the first round of the fair one. I wouldn't be here.
You'd have laid me out,
Nah, you're a prince, all right. I never would have thought it at first, but you are. There's something in you that's as hard as old paint.
And dark, I thought. My own dark well, of which I'd do well to beware.
Could you find him?
He asked, stroking Radar's head with one big, scarred hand.
We can take care of the rest, I've no doubt. With the night soldiers in their daylight weakness and not able to protect them, Eldon's little crew of ass-lickers will run like the rabbits they are, and we'll slaughter them like rabbits. But Flight Killer, can you find him, if he's gone deep? Do you have, I don't know, some...
Spidey sense was what I thought, but not what came out of my mouth. Some princey sense? He laughed at that, but said yes, he supposed that was what he meant. I don't.
What about Percy? The one who helped us. Could he find his way to the dark well?
I considered the idea, then shook my head. I hoped like hell that Percy was still alive, but knew the chances were small. Kellen would know we hadn't escaped on our own. He might give me credit for the lethal trick with the buckets of water, but knowing about the door, with the cabinet in front of it? That had to have come from an insider. And even if Percy had so far escaped death and the torture chamber's inducements to talk, the chances of him knowing the way to the dark well were small. We were in deep shadow where not even the flickering light of the last dying campfires could reach, so I took another sulfur match from my sock and scratched it on the side of the building. I brushed back my hair and held it in front of my eyes.
What do you see?
Still hazel? Iota leaned close.
Nah, blue, bright blue, my prince.
I wasn't surprised. Call me Charlie, I said, and shook out the match. As for the world I came from, I think all worlds are magic. We just get used to it.
What now?
For me? I'm going to wait. You can wait with me or go back inside and try to sleep.
I'll stay.
We will too,
someone said. I turned and saw the two women, Eris and Jaya. It was Eris who had spoken.
What are we waiting for, my prince?
Call him Charlie, I said. He likes it better. Modest, you know, like a prince in a story.
We'll see what I'm waiting for or we won't. Now be quiet. We were quiet. Crickets, presumably not red ones, sang in the weeds and in the rubble of the ruined suburb that sprawled outside the city. We breathed free air. It was good. Time passed. Falada cropped, then merely stood with her head down, presumably dozing. Radar was fast asleep. After a while, Jaya pointed at the sky. Behind the massed clouds, 2 bright lights were passing, traveling at high speed. The lights weren't touching, kissing,
but even with the cloud cover we could see, they were very, very close. They passed behind the triple spires of the palace and were gone. The circle of gas jets ringing the stadium had gone out. The city was dark, but inside the wall, the remaining night soldiers would be patrolling. An hour passed, then two. My interior clock was as wrong as Iota's, but it had to be closing on first light when what I had been expecting, what the dark part of my nature had been hoping for, happened. Princess Leia emerged from the church. With the pants and boots and short sword, it could be no one else. I sat up straight and opened his mouth. I put a hand on his chest and raised a finger to my lips. We watched as she untied Falada and led her toward the city gate, keeping her clear of the cobbled surface of the road, where the clop of her hooves might alert some light sleeper. The princess was little more than a darker shape in the darkness when she mounted up. I stood.
"No one needs to go with me," I said. "But after all we've been through, I won't stop you if you decide to come."
"Right beside you," I said.
"I'll go,"
Eris said. Jaya merely nodded.
"Not you, Radar," I said. "Stay with Claudia."
Her ears drooped. Her tail stopped wagging. There was no mistaking the hope and pleading in those eyes.
"No," I said. "One trip to the Lily is all you get."
"Woman's getting ahead of us, Charlie," I said. "And the main gate is close. If we're going to catch up with her,
walk, but slowly, we've got plenty of time. She won't try entering until daylight. She wants to see with her own eyes that the flight killer isn't her brother, and I imagine she'd like to save Eldon if he still lives, but she's not stupid. We'll catch up to her before she goes in, and I'll persuade her to join us."
"How will you do that?"
Eris asked. "By any means necessary." No one said anything to that.
"Eldon may be at the Dark Well already, waiting for the moons to kiss. We have to get there and stop him before it happens."
"By any means necessary,"
Eris said, low.
"What if Leia don't know the way?"
Iota asked. "Then," I said, "we're hung."
"My prince,"
Jaya said.
"Charlie, I mean."
She turned and pointed. Radar was padding along behind us. She saw me looking and raced to catch up. I knelt and took her head in my hands.
"Disobedient dog. Will you go back?"
She only looked at me. I sighed and stood up.
"All right, come along."
She walked at my heel, and that was how we four, five, counting Radar, advanced on the haunted city. 6. The gate was close, looming, when something jumped out at us from a ruined building on the left side of the road. I drew Mr. Bowditch's 45, but before I could bring it up, let alone aim, the shape took a large, but still slightly crooked, leap and landed on Radar's back. It was the Snab. We were astonished. Radar wasn't. She had carried this passenger before and seemed perfectly willing to do it again. The Snab settled on her neck like a lookout. I saw no sign of Leia and Falada camped outside the gate. I didn't like that. I stopped, trying to decide what to do next. The Snab jumped down from its mount, went almost to the gate, then turned right. Radar followed, nosed at the cricket, who didn't seem to mind, then looked back at us to see if we were coming. A paved path, perhaps meant for maintenance in the old days, led through the rubble near the outside of the wall, which here was covered with shags of ivy. The Snab led the way, jumping through weeds and nimbly hurdling spilled bricks. After no more than 100 steps, I saw a white shape in the dark ahead of us. It let out a wicker. Sitting beside Falada, cross-legged and waiting for dawn, was Princess Leia. She saw the cricket first, then the rest of us. She got to her feet and stood facing us with her hand on the hilt of her sword and her feet apart as if ready for combat. Falada spoke, but dispensed with the third person.
"So, Sir Snab has led you to me, and now that you've found me, you must go back."
Who keeps your geese, my lady, while you are away?
Not what I expected to say, and not the way Charlie Reed of Century, Illinois, would have said anything. Her eyes widened, then crinkled a bit at the corners. With no mouth, it was hard to be sure, but I think she was amused as well as surprised.
Falada said, My mistress's men, Wit and Dickon, keep them very well.
As in Dick Whittington, I thought. Jaya,
does that horse?
Leah waved her to silence. Jaya shrank back and dropped her eyes.
Now that your foolish question has been answered, leave us. I have serious business.
I looked into her upturned face, beautiful except for the scar where her mouth should have been, and the ugly sore beside it.
Have you eaten?
I asked.
Because you have to be strong for what's ahead, my lady. I've taken what I need,
Falada said. I could see Leah's throat working with the effort it took to throw her voice.
Now go. I command you.
I took her hands. They were small in mine and cold. She was putting up a good front, the haughty princess in total control, but I thought she was scared to death. She tried to pull her hands back. I held on.
No, Leah, it's I who commands you. I'm the promised prince. I think you know that. Not the prince of this world,
Falada said, and now I could hear the clicks and mumbles in Leah's throat. Her polite speech was of necessity rather than desire. If she hadn't been forced, and with great effort, to speak through the mare, she would have torn me a new one. There was no amusement in her eyes now, just fury. This woman, who fed the geese from her apron, was used to being obeyed without question.
No,
I agreed.
Not the prince of this world, and not a prince in mine, but I have spent long days in a dungeon. I've been forced to kill, and I've seen my companions die. Do you understand me, princess? Do you understand my right to command you?
Falada said nothing. One tear fell from Leah's left eye and made a slow path down her smooth cheek. Walk with me a little way, please. She shook her head violently enough to make her hair fly around her face. Again she tried to pull her hands away, and again I held them.
There's time, at least an hour before first light, and your whole world may depend on what we say one to the other. Even mine may be at risk, so please.
I let go of her hands. I took one of the remaining sulfur matches from my sock. I pushed some of the ivy aside, struck the match on the rough stone, and held it in front of my face as I'd done with Iota. She stood on tiptoe to peer at me, close enough that I could have kissed her upturned brow.
Blue,
Falada said.
It does talk,
Eris murmured.
No, it's her,
Iota said in the same low voice. They were awestruck. I was too, and why not? There was magic here, and now I was part of it. That terrified me, because I was no longer entirely myself, but it also exalted me.
Come, lady. We need to talk. Please, come.
She did. 7. We went a little way down the path from the others, the ivy-covered city wall on our left, the rubble of the destroyed suburb on our right, the dark sky above us.
We need to stop him, I said, before he brings some terrible cataclysm.
Radar was walking between us with the snab perched on her neck, and it was the snab who answered. This voice was much clearer than the one Leah used when she was speaking through Falada.
It is not my brother. Flight Killer is not Eldon. He would never do such terrible things. He was gentle and loving.
People change, I thought. My father did, and I did when I was with Birdie. I remember wondering why a good person like me was doing such shitty things.
If he lives, the snab said, he's a prisoner. But I don't believe that. I believe he's dead, like so many of my family.
I believe that too, I said. It was no lie, because surely the Eldon she had known, the one who held her hand as they explored the secret ways of the palace, the one who listened to the songs the mermaid sang. That Eldon was dead. All that remained was Gog Magog's puppet. We stopped. Her throat worked, and the snab spoke. So much ventriloquism had to be hurting her, even though the snab was her most ideal conduit, but she had to say what she'd held in her heart for so long.
If he's a prisoner, I'll set him free. If he's dead, I will avenge him, that the curse on this sad land might be lifted. This is my job, and not yours, you son of Adrian Bowditch.
I wasn't his son, only his heir, but this didn't seem to be the time to tell her that.
Flightkiller has almost certainly gone to the Dark Well, Princess. There he'll wait until the moon's kiss and the way is opened. Can you find it?
She nodded, but looked uncertain.
Will you lead us there? Because there's no way we can find it by ourselves. Would you, if I promised to leave Flightkiller's fate to you when we face him?
For a long time, there was no answer. She wasn't sure I'd keep my promise, and she was right to be unsure. If she recognized Eldon and couldn't bring herself to kill him, even the way he was now, would I honor her wish and let him live? I thought of Dora's ruined face and honest heart. I thought of Percy's bravery, for which he had most likely already paid a high price. I thought of the gray refugees I'd seen making their way from seafront to some place of refuge that probably didn't exist. Put those wounded and becursed people on one side of a scale and a princess's tender heart on the other, and there was no way they would balance.
Would you really give Leah of the Galleon such a promise?
I didn't think that was a return to the third person. I think the snab might have been speaking for itself that time. But I had no doubt that Leah wanted to know the same thing.
I would. She said, do you promise on the soul of your mother that she might burn in the fires of hell if you break your word?
I do, I said, without hesitation. And that was a promise I meant to keep. When Leah saw what her brother had become, she might kill him herself. I could hope for that. If not, I'd give Mr. Bowditch's gun to Iota. He had never fired one before, but I didn't expect any trouble on that account. Guns are like cheap cameras. All you have to do is point and shoot.
You and your friends will follow Leah and obey her.
We will. She probably knew she couldn't stop me from following her. The others might obey a command from Empus's queen in waiting, but I wouldn't. As she already said, through Falada, I was not a prince of this world and not bound by her commands. Overhead, the sky brightened. We humans looked up. So did Radar. Even the snab did. Bright orbs lit the clouds. The moons were now so close together they looked like a figure eight lying on its side, or the eternity symbol. In mere seconds, they passed behind the palace spires, and the sky was dark again.
All right, the snab said. I agree to your terms. No more talk, please. It hurts.
I know, I said. And I'm sorry. Radar whined and licked Leah's hand. Leah bent and stroked her. The pact was made. Chapter 28. Into the City. The Sound of Mourning. Hannah. She Who Once Sang. Gold. The Kitchen. The Receiving Chamber. We Must Go Up to Go Down. 1. Leah led us back to where the others waited. She sat down again without a word from Falada or the snab. Iota looked at me. I nodded. Done deal. We sat down with her and waited for dawn. It started to rain again, not hard, but steadily. Leah took a poncho from the single saddlebag Falada carried and slipped it over her shoulders. She beckoned to Radar, who looked at me for permission, then went to Leah. She flapped the poncho over her. The snab went too. They were dry. The rest of us, dressed in the rags we'd escaped wearing, got wet.
Jaya began to shiver. Eris hugged her. I told them they could go back. Both women shook their heads. Iota didn't bother, just sat with his head bowed and his hands clasped. Time passed. There came a moment when I looked up and realized I could see Leah. I raised a hand to her, in question. She only shook her head. At last, when the day had brightened to a watery dawn, she got to her feet and tied Falada to a piece of iron that jutted from the remains of a brick wall, rising from the rubble. She started down the path without looking to see if we were following. The snab was on Radar's back again. Leah walked slowly, occasionally brushing aside the thick growth of ivy, looking, then moving on. After 5 minutes or so, she stopped and began to tear at the vines. I moved to help her, but she shook her head. We had an agreement, a pact, but it was clear she wasn't happy about it. She pulled away more of the ivy, and I saw the small door that had been hiding behind it. There was no latch, no knob. She beckoned to me and pointed at it. For a moment, I didn't know what was expected of me. Then, I did. "Open in the name of Leah of the Galleon," I said. And the door swung open. 2. We entered a long barn-like building filled with ancient maintenance equipment. The shovels, hoes, and wheelbarrows were all covered in a thick pall of dust. The floor was also dusty, and there were no tracks except for the ones we left behind us. I spotted another of those bus-cart hybrids. I looked into it and saw a battery so corroded it was just a green lump. I wondered where these little vehicles, two at least, one still operative, had come from. Had Mr. Bowditch brought in equipment from our world piecemeal and assembled it here? I didn't know. All I knew for sure was that the present regime cared little about keeping Lillimar neat and tidy. What it cared about were blood sports. Leah led us out a door on the far side. We found ourselves in a kind of junkyard filled with disassembled trolleys, piles of power poles, and great snarls of trolley wires. We wove our way through this useless equipment, up a set of wooden steps, and into a room I and the other escapees recognized. The trolley storage area. We were crossing the main terminal when the morning bell rang its one reverberating bong. Leah stopped until the sound faded away, then went on. She still didn't look back to see if we were following. Our footfalls echoed. Overhead, a dark cloud of giant bats fluttered their wings but didn't stir otherwise.
"Last time we were going," Eris said in a low voice. "This time we're coming. I've got a score of my own to settle with that bitch."
I didn't reply. I wasn't interested. My mind was fixed. We went out into the rain. Radar suddenly bolted down the trolley house steps and past one of the red and white posts with its stone butterfly on top. She nosed into the brambles. I saw one strap of my discarded backpack, then heard the last thing I would have expected, but one I recognized at once. Radar came trotting back with her squeaky monkey. She dropped it at my feet and looked up at me, wagging her tail.
"Good girl,"
I said, and gave it to I. He had pockets. I didn't. The broad way leading to the palace was deserted, but not empty. Red Molly's body was gone, but the bones of the night soldiers who'd come after us were scattered for 40 yards, most buried under heaps of dead monarch butterflies. Leah had stopped at the foot of the steps, head cocked, listening. We joined her. I could hear it too. A kind of high moaning, like wind gusting around the eaves on a winter night. It rose and fell, climbed to a shriek, then subsided to moaning again.
"High gods, what is it?"
Jaya whispered.
"The sound of mourning," I said.
"Where's the snab?"
Iota asked. I shook my head.
"Didn't like the rain, maybe?"
Leah started up the galleon road toward the palace. I put a hand on her shoulder and stopped her. We should go in from behind and come out near the games field. I can't find the way, a little shit named Peterkin wiped away Mr. Bowditch's marks, but I bet you know how to get there. Leah put her hands on her slim hips and stared at me with exasperation. She pointed toward the sound of Hannah grieving her daughter. Then, in case I was too thick to understand, she raised her hands high above her head.
The princess is right, Charlie,
Iota said.
Why go that way if we can avoid the big bitch by going in the front door?
I took his point, but there were other points that seemed more important to me.
Because she eats human flesh. I'm pretty sure it's why she was kicked out of Giant Land, whatever you call it around here. Do you understand that? She eats human flesh, and she serves him.
Leah looked up into my eyes. Very slowly, she nodded and pointed to the gun I wore.
Yes, I said. And there's another reason, my lady. Something I need you to see.
3. We went a little way further up the galleon road. Then Leah turned left into a byway so narrow it wasn't much more than an alley. She led us through a maze of streets, never hesitating. I hoped she knew what she was doing. It had been many years since she'd been here. On the other hand, we had Hannah's howls of grief to guide us. Jaya and Eris caught up to me. Eris looked grim, set. Jaya looked freaked out. She said,
"The buildings don't stay steady. I know that's crazy, but they don't. Every time I look away, I see them change out of the corner of my eye."
"And I keep thinking I hear voices," I said. "This place feels, I don't know, haunted."
"Because it is," I said. "We're going to exorcise it, or die trying."
"Exorcise?"
Eris asked. Hannah's howling grew steadily louder.
"Never mind," I said. "One thing at a time."
Leah led us down an alley where the buildings were so close together it felt like we were slipping through a crevasse. I could see the bricks of one building and the stone of the other moving.